6:33 a.m. We're broadcasting live from our studios on Music Row in Nashville, Tennessee. We welcome to our microphones right now the official guest host of the Tennessee Star Report and the lead political reporter, Aaron Gulbranson. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning. I wonder if the audience got sick of me last week a little bit, but you know.
I got good reports.
Well, that's good.
I got good reports.
We had a good time.
And no one ever gets sick of you, Aaron.
Maybe.
Asterisk.
Maybe my wife.
You said it. I didn't. Well, now, Aaron, unprecedented day yesterday in American history. I think it's hard to overstate the importance of this, the significance of it. Yesterday, the FBI conducted a raid on Donald Trump's private residence. They persuaded a federal judge to sign a search warrant. You get a search warrant if you think there's probable cause that a crime has been committed. And yet, the former president was caught unawares of this. It had to do, according to sources, with something to do with the Presidential Records Act. Never, ever in American history, in 243 years of our Constitutional Republic, has law enforcement conducted a raid on the residence, the private residence of a former president and the likely leading contender in the 2024 election. Your thoughts on this, Aaron Gulbranson?
I have a lot of thoughts on it. I think it's... I also really don't buy the White House's line that they didn't know
I don't believe that for a second.
I got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell if people believe that line. Number two, this is... In a previous life, I covered a lot of... did a lot of work on the Russia collusion angle. And every time something popped up with it, there was two things that were very clear. One was the Obama administration officials were lying on television, and when they put their hand on the Bible, they said no Russia collusion, and then it was amazing. I mean, there could be an hour difference in the, and then number two is the thing that was consistently popping up through all of those things was not a rogue FBI, but an FBI that went and did everything they could to damage President Trump and the people around him, and you know, General Flynn, and this is all fairly famous. I would encourage people to go back and look through the congressional testimony transcripts to see what these people were up to, because every time, whether it was the director of the FBI, FBI agents, they all testified nothing. So to me, this seems just squarely aimed at making sure that Trump cannot run, or at least an attempt to damage him during, because if this is the Presidential Record, or if this is the Records Act, and they're trying to charge him with a crime, which, mind you, a president, when he's sitting, can declassify whatever the world he wants. And then now you're getting into this gray area going, did he declassify it? And is it Biden decided that it's classified again? I mean, what is this back and forth? This is a very weird hot potato situation.
It's clearly political.
Yeah, it's overtly. Yeah. And unfortunately, in another hearing yesterday, talking about political positions, that sort of thing, which we can get into later on. Everything is political at this point in time.
Everything,
in the world.
I think this is the beginning, and the fact that they didn't issue a press statement from the Department of Justice is telling.
Yes.
They're trying to hide something, of course. They don't want the name of the federal judge out. They don't want a copy of the affidavit that they submitted to get the search warrant. It all stinks to high heaven.
I want to point out something. Back to the Russia collusion thing.
Yeah.
It was proven that to get the FISA warrants, that they lied to the FISA court.
Right.
So who's to say they didn't lie this time to go get the raid?
You know what surprises me? Where is former President George W. Bush with his statement on this?
I don't have a lot of words in positive towards former President Bush. He's just not... He hasn't acted.
He's not going to step up.
No, he's not going to step up. He hasn't acted in the best interest of the country. He just has purely shown, I hate Donald Trump.
Yeah, okay.
So no matter what, it's good for bad for the country. He's just probably silently
Not there at all, and failing to step up. on this is just unconscionable. And but that's where George W. Bush is. That's his headset, right? His mindset right now. Now, related to this, we're talking about the abuse of power and the violation of the rule of law that we just saw yesterday happen with the out-of-control Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the United States, and the out-of-control Christopher Wray, the director of the FBI. Now, pushback in our Federalist society, increasingly it comes from the role of the Attorney General of the state.
Right.
Yesterday, you spent how long? 6 hours up at the Capitol?
It was ridiculous. I think the official time was 6 hours and 19 minutes.
And you
minutes.
Were there for every minute of it.
Just about, yeah.
Oh.
Bathroom breaks.
See, this is why we pay you the big bucks to report on this. And you had a very interesting story about this. And just to set the background on it, and I think we at the Tennessee Star, are responsible for the greater transparency of this process, frankly.
Right.
And really the only news outlet that's reported extensively on it in the entire state. Just a reminder, the Attorney General is a very important job. They defend the rights of the state of Tennessee against the usurpations of the federal government. You know, those usurpations are continuing at an accelerating pace, and so this is an important job. And the state of Tennessee is the only state in the union where the state Supreme Court selects the Attorney General. Now, James Madison would say this is an egregious violation of separation of powers. Nonetheless, it's been in our Constitution since 1835. 43 states have a direct election of Attorney General. 5 states, the Attorney General is nominated by the governor and confirmed by the state legislature. And in Maine, the Attorney General is selected by the state legislature, but only here is the Attorney General selected by the Supreme Court. They've announced for the first time in history all of the candidates as soon as the application process was done. That's because of our reporting, your reporting at the Tennessee Star. And then yesterday, they held this 6.5-hour hearing for the 6 candidates. Tell us about what you learned in that 6.5 hours about those candidates and about how the Supreme Court justices, all 5 of them, are approaching this process of selecting the next Attorney General who will step into this job on September 1st.
So there was 10-minute introductory comments. I want to give you the list so the public knows who's applying. You've got former U.S. Attorney, Belmont University College of Law Professor Donald Q. Cochran Jr.
Who
during part of his 10 minutes was introduced and recommended by former Attorney General of the United States, Alberto Gonzalez.
And now the Dean of the Belmont School of Law.
So it's always kind of a cool moment to be in the same room as someone like that. But he did well. Then you have Administrative Law Judge for Tennessee Secretary of State's office, Jerome Cochran, former U.S. Attorney and current Tennessee Comptroller of the Treasury Chief Investigative Counsel, David Michael Donovan. The managing shareholder of Baker Donaldson and, you know, all the 5,000 names on that giant firm, Culver Schmid, general counsel to Governor Bill Lee, Jonathan Scarametti, and Tennessee Bureau of Ethics and Campaign Finance Executive Director William Edwin Bill Young. And as I mentioned, Alberto Gonzalez spoke in support of Donald Q. Cochran. The beginning was each candidate had 10 minutes to do their introductory, whether it was them or a surrogate. Then we went into, and I have to say, during the breaks, during the hearing, the tone was respectful, collegial between the justices and the applicants. All the applicants seemed to enjoy talking with one another. They're all attorneys, right? They're all fairly high
level attorneys.
They're all in the club. They all know.
1 minute.
And it's not like, you know, when you have a debate in these other 43 states when the attorney general, it's a contested office, and it's like mudslinging left and right.
Right. And the weird part, and, you know, the justices are used to taking breaks whenever they feel like, and they clearly did that. It didn't seem like there was a pre-plan, but they let one member of the public ask a question.
Just one.
And it was very informal, almost. I mean, it was formal once you got to the microphone. But you raised your hand, and then they're like, after the one question was asked, okay, we're going to a break. We'll be back on something else.
And how many questions did the public end up asking?
One.
Okay, this, folks, Supreme Court justice members, look, you're doing better on transparency. Thank you for that. But come on, one question from the public? There ought to be dozens, if not hundreds, of questions from the public. We'll have more with Aaron Goldmanson after this. This is the Tennessee Star Report. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy. And so we're back with Aaron Goldmanson, the official guest host of the Tennessee Star Report, and also the chief of legal or chief political correspondent.
I was going to say, don't say legal.
Yeah, chief political correspondent for the Tennessee Star. So, Aaron, I want to go back to these hearings yesterday. Six candidates for attorney general. I got the impression that it was less perfunctory than the previous time, but far short of the kind of transparency that and robustness that we were hoping for. I'll give you an example of this. The public yesterday only got to ask one question. Is that right?
Yes.
Now, this seems to be... describe how this happened.
It was fairly abrupt. A woman from... If she hears about this and I'm wrong, from Williamson County, asked about a particular case that happened a few years ago, and they asked the question of Jonathan Scarametti, general counsel to Governor Bill Lee, if he ever reviewed papers regarding the case. And so she asked her question. She had 3 minutes to ask the question. Scarametti had 3 minutes to respond. That would have been the normal flow of things had there been more questions asked. And he answered his question. Then Justice Roger, there was at least one other person in the room getting ready to ask a question. And then the Chief Justice Roger Page just goes, all right, it's time for a break. And when we come back from the break, and this is a paraphrase, obviously, but when we come back from the break, it is our turn, the justices, to ask questions of...
You're kidding.
So
they only allowed one question from the public.
Right.
Okay. Now, I know the members of the Supreme Court listen to this program. And so as you're going in today to prepare for the next round of hearings, you're not getting a good mark here for transparency on this by only allowing one question from the public. There are a number of questions that I think that the public is interested in asking. I think questions about... You know, how you would respond to, for instance, the requirements, the COVID-19 requirements on the National Guard.
Right.
Right. I think that is an area where the current attorney general just failed to do what I think the attorney general ought to do.
Or respond. Questions about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, if you want to talk about the broader question, that would be an example of this broader theme. What will be your approach to the constant and increasing usurpations of the national federal government upon states' rights? That, to me, is the most important question. But nobody from the public was able to ask that question.
Right. Exactly right. You had the one Democrat appointee, Justice Sharon Lee, focus a lot of her questioning on the nonpartisan nature that she views of the attorney general, which of course,
give me a break.
With all due respect to Justice Lee, everything is politics in this day and age. And unfortunately, defending the Constitution and fighting against federal overreach, which is, in my view, the proper role of attorney general for this state and any other, it's a right. You're squarely on the right if you're willing to fight for those things, for the Constitution, both state and federal.
So it looks like the most important question has not yet been asked.
Right.
This is troublesome to me because I think, look, these guys, these six candidates are all skilled attorneys. And so I think it's important to try and divine, if you will, how they will approach these constant usurpations of the federal government.
Well, and unfortunately, and this is, I don't know what's going on in the justices' heads, and I'm not going to pretend to, but I know enough judges to go that they are, even the ones that are elected with a party next to their name or appointed by a party, they tend to do as much as they can to avoid partisanship, or at least the appearance of partisanship. What needs to happen, and I think underscored last night, the FBI raid on the president's, the former president of the United States House in Mar-a-Lago, underscored the need for conservative fighters everywhere we go, especially in the legal system.
Especially in the attorney general's job at, in the state of Tennessee. And right now, I would say we're getting an unsatisfactory and incomplete idea of whether or not any of these six are going to be the kind of fighters that we need. And I think the responsibility for that lies squarely on the justices of the Supreme Court.
Right. And I, you know, I walked out of there going, all any one of these, in terms of just basic resume and ability to present, any one of the six candidates would be, they acquitted themselves well in that regard.
All six of them did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they, you didn't necessarily walk out of there going, here is my conservative fighter who's going to go take a
and
hammer.
That's what, and that's what's needed. Now, I want to also talk a little bit about what kind of press coverage was there. I know you were there for the entire time the Tennessee Star was there. Who else
you
was
had
there?
The, you had the Tennessean, which I know the only person in the room wearing a mask was, I guess that's their corporate policy over at the Tennessean.
the Tennessean reporter wore a mask.
Yes, a black, you know, very
a stylish mask.
Yes, exactly. So, and then you had one of the reporters from the outlet. I guess the newer outlet, the Pamphleteer.
The Pamphleteer, kind of a libertarian type blog out there, and we like them. They were, we're friends with them.
It's a good outlet over there, and you know, our friend, all star panelist Roger Simon, always speaks highly of them to me when we have our offline conversations, but. I don't think there, that's I don't think that's a state secret, but yeah, it was also the there was a little bit of a vibe, I would say, that almost an attitude, an unspoken attitude, is like from the justices, possibly, you know, why is the press here? It kind of felt that way, you know,
they're coming into our club.
Yeah. it was never anything that you could, but you could just almost see when, like, you, when you were looking at them, when they're asking questions.
Okay, and so listening to this, as you're driving in, the five Supreme Court justices, we're not giving you a good grade for transparency here. You got to let the public ask more questions so we can divine who will be the real conservative fighter as AG. We need one. We'll be back with Aaron Gulbranson after this. This is the Tennessee Star Report. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy.